Welcome to this week's episode of The Homeschool How-To. I'm Cheryl, and I invite you to join me on my quest to find out, why are people homeschooling? How do you do it? How does it differ from region to region? And should I homeschool my kids? Stick with me as I interview homeschooling families across the country to unfold the answers to each of these questions week by week. Welcome, and with us today we have Becky with Homeschooling Olympians. Hi, Becky. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Cheryl. I'm excited to be here. So
what got you? Well, first, let's say ask you how many kids you have and their ages.
Okay, I have 5 sons.
Oh goodness, and you're not the only one I know with 5 boys. God bless you.
No, and it is as crazy as it sounds, but we are at the end of our homeschool career. So our baby is 18.
Oh my goodness.
So we have 18, 20, almost 22, 25 and married, and 30 and married. And we've been homeschooling, or we homeschooled over 25 years. So
that is so cool. And I love that because you have such an interesting perspective, I'm sure, from what you have seen since the beginning to now.
Yes.
So let's take it back to the decision for you to homeschool. Were you homeschooled yourself?
No, I was tricked into homeschool, Cheryl. My husband said, I want us to homeschool our kids. So at the time we had, our oldest was 5, and I was, so that would mean I was expecting number 2. And so he said, I want us to homeschool our kids. And I said, no, homeschoolers are weird. I'm not homeschooling my kids. And he said, Becky, just try it for a year. Give it your best shot. We'll give it our best shot as a family. If we hate it, we'll do something else. He knew I'm a teacher at heart. He knew I would fall in love with being there when the kids' light bulbs moments came on. And after that first day of homeschool, we were hooked. So, yeah.
So what made him want to homeschool?
We were at the time, our son was in a private kindergarten. And the church that we were attending opened a co-op school where the parents taught in different classrooms. And so his mindset was, let's support our church. Let's support our community. We'll put our kids in this co-op school. And it just didn't make sense to me. I had so many, not only did I think homeschoolers were weird, because, and I have nothing to back that on. I knew no homeschoolers. So I thought homeschoolers were weird. But I was still of the mindset that you had to be a certified teacher in order to educate the kids. And so I looked at that co-op school and I thought, well, that's just a bunch of moms teaching a bunch of kids and that's not going to work. And then the turning point came for me. I was in my son's kindergarten final evaluation. And I loved his teacher. She was amazing. And she was showing me all of, you know, T's work. And then she shared, I'm so excited. I'm going to be getting my teaching certificate next year. And in my heart, I gasped and I went, wait a second. You're not even a certified teacher, but you're amazing. And in that moment, I realized you can be an uncertified person and be an amazing educator. And then I went back through my file of memories. And I thought, well, shoot, there's a lot of certified teachers that are terrible out there.
Yeah.
So anyway, that was the beginning.
That's so cool. And all right, so we're talking 25 years ago, it's 2024 right now. We're like 1999 era to 2000.
Yep.
So this is like just before 9/11, you know, we're just kind of like grasping the era this was in. Not super popular really at all then. And what state are you in?
We started in California. We're currently in Washington State.
Okay. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then and you have a little bit of an age gap. You have the same age gap that I do with my kids. I have about 4 years between the two of them. So, and you have 5 now. So did you know going into not having your second until 5 years later that you were going to have 3 more after those two?
No, although I don't believe in superstition and old wives' tales. I still remember being at my first baby shower and my cousin doing one of those wives' tale tricks that they hold something over your tummy. And then based on what it does, it predicts what you're going to have. And whatever she did, I can't even remember. She's like, oh, you're going to have 5 sons. And I wasn't even a mom then. And I literally said, who in their right mind would have 5 boys?
How funny. I know. And I tell you that I know 2 other women at least that have 5 boys each. And they're both like the calmest people I know. Like, I don't know if it's just they're so desensitized from chaos
probably.
It's just like, yeah. So then your second comes along and now you're homeschooling and you have a baby. How did you find that juggling act to go?
You know, it was overwhelming at first. Somewhere in there's a little bit of a blur in my memory. So our oldest and our second are about 5 years apart. And then our next one is 3.5 years under that. And then we had boom, boom, boom. Like we had like these 3 kids in there. So somewhere in there, I found myself at home and I was pregnant a lot. But so I was physically overwhelmed because I can't walk when I'm pregnant. Oh. Our second son had major medical issues and needed major surgeries.
Oh my goodness.
And so here I am. I'm a new homeschooler. I have a child that needs major surgeries. I'm pregnant. I can't walk. And to say I was overwhelmed is an understatement. Like it's such a blur in my mind. But that's also the birthplace of where we got our first dose of clarity, because I was so overwhelmed and I didn't know what I was doing. And we've done every style of homeschool that you can do. So I'm a big proponent of you do what works right now in this season, in this life. But we started with public school in a box and we've done all the things like when we went home. And I remember sitting at the table and I had all the curriculum out. The kids were all over the place. I was in pain and I was in tears. And my husband says, you know, why are you crying? Like, I can't do it. I can't be wife and mom and cook and teach 3 different grades and birth a baby. I just can't do it. And he's like, Becky, he like mentally pushed all the curriculum aside. And he said, what's our goal? By the time the kids graduate high school, what do we want them to know? And so it's back in that moment of chaos that we formed our master homeschool goals, and they've been our guiding light since then. So
can I ask what those goals were?
Mm-hmm. It took a couple days, but they're very basic, to share our faith with our kids in everything that we do, because for us it's core and foundational, that our kids would know their basic math facts inside and out by the time they graduate, the stuff they would need for life, right? Not all kids are mathematicians. So basic math, to marinate them in excellent literature so that they would fall in love with story, fall in love with reading, be marinated in language, and that they would become excellent communicators, both in written and oral form, by the time they graduated. And once we had those things in place, everything we did was filtered through that, because it helps you cut through all the busy work. It's just so great. So
yeah. And there is so much busy work in school, and some of it is there so that the kids have something to do while the teachers are trying to tame the rest of the class, you know, and we have to realize like we're not in, we were bred kind of, if you went to public school or private school, like that's all you know. Yeah. You don't really know to expand. Yeah. And if, you know, even if you're a teacher, I would imagine, whether you are or you aren't, you feel like there are these things that kids must know by the end of each grade, right? Like, quote unquote, grade. And that was the biggest thing for me starting this podcast and talking to people, is realizing that no, there is not a set of criteria that the state or the government as of today will not come and take your child if you do not teach them X, Y, and Z by the end of 3rd grade, 4th grade, 5th grade, 12th grade.
Yes.
Right? Like you, and college doesn't even have to be your goal. Like in fact, it probably shouldn't be, unless there is something specific that child wants to do and they need that degree to do it. But just to like,
in my heart, I'm going like this. In my heart, I'm like, yes, preach,
all that I just realized in this last year. And I think parents, yeah, really need to know that, because especially if you're a homeschooler, you just kind of think, well, everybody knows that. And then
they don't.
No, not at all. And like to be reinforced, to be reinforced that no, they don't have to know certain things by ages or grades. And that's so cool. So I can't, I can't imagine you going through not being able to walk and your child being in surgeries and then homeschooling. Did you ever think like, okay, I'm going to put my oldest in school right now because I just need to get through this season? Or was it like, nope, we're going to take, this is what God gave us. We're going.
No, it was more that we wanted to put our oldest on a desert island, especially like in the teen, the 12-year-old years. We always took it 1 year at a time. And so I don't remember ever feeling like I need to put them in school in order for somebody to do better than what we could at home.
Okay.
I don't even know why I was so confident that the little bit that we did during those seasons was going to be enough. Like I couldn't articulate there's no list of the 47,000 things that kids need to learn by the time they graduate. That list does not exist. I couldn't clearly articulate that until a year or two ago. And that's after 25 years of homeschool, but it was something that we intuitively did. So because we were reading, they were marinating in story, they were learning vocabulary because they knew their basic math facts, because we had a family culture of community and adventure built in. I just trusted that it was all going to work out. And it was blind faith because I hadn't done this before. But I'm on the other side now, and I can clearly speak this from the perspective of somebody that went through not knowing what I was doing, not, you know, being in pain, being overwhelmed, having struggles with boys, like in the 12-year-old range. Oh my goodness, so crazy. Having all of them be delayed readers, all of them. And even our youngest didn't read till he was 10. And so still having all of those things that should have tripped me up and caused me to quit. It's like, nope, it turned out great. It turned out great. So,
so with having kids who are delayed readers. Mm-hmm. And again, that's such a crazy even like term for it, because who said they should read at any certain age, right?
Right. Thank you very much.
But deviating from the norm of what public school expects from them, how do you, as a parent, you would feel like I'm doing something wrong, right? Like, let me throw up my hands, give them to the system, because then if they're a delayed reader, it's the teacher's problem. It's the teacher's fault. It's the it's the government's fault for, you know, it's not mom's fault anymore. And it really, like, moms and dads, we got to take pride in that. Just that it takes a lot to homeschool your kid and to not say, Like to take the responsibility for educating them, right? Because it's so much easier to say, I'm going to give them to a teacher because the states know better, the government knows better. Right. And then when things go wrong, it's not my fault. It's the state's fault.
Right?
You're taking the responsibility. And so how did you go through that process and like validating yourself as, no, this is still the right thing for them and I'm not failing?
So remember the difference between... Because the other thing is that there's not a list of 47,000 things you need to learn. There is also it's just a lie about grade levels in kids. It's just a figment of a publisher's imagination, because if you finish grade 2, that means you're going to want to buy grade 3. So they have all of these things kitted for you so that you feel that pressure that you need to move on. So there's curriculum. Through a curriculum mindset, because then we coach homeschoolers all the time, but if you're focused on curriculum, you're looking at second grade and you're thinking, ooh, they better know fractions, they better know how to read, they better know this. But if you homeschool to your homeschool goals, remember our goal was that they would be marinated in literature and that they would fall in love with learning by the time they graduate high school. Mm-hmm. So that was like, whew, no pressure at all. Did it did people think it was odd that an 8, 9, or 10-year-old couldn't read? Absolutely. But we just kept saying the same thing. Our goal is it's not when he's going to read, it's that he's going to read. Mm-hmm. And Cheryl, I can tell you what I learned with our dyslexic, most delayed reader. He didn't read till he was 10. He had a house full of people reading to him, right? He went from not reading to I lost him one day. Stephen, where's Stephen? Stephen, it took me half an hour to find him. He was buried under the dog in a beanbag pile, reading a chapter book.
Oh my goodness.
And I moved the dog and I went, what are you doing? He's like, I'm reading. And I'm like, what do you mean you're reading? Like, when did you learn to read? Like, light bulb moment. But what I learned is that he's 18. He's at a private university studying business on a Division I rowing team. So he's like the epitome of success, like on this side academically. But he did not spend his childhood, the precious years, decoding words, struggling with the mindset of I can't do it. This is too hard. This is too yuck. Instead, it was read me another chapter. You know, let's listen to another story. When it unlocked, he went from 0 to 190 miles an hour. If I could go back, I would not have tried to teach any of my kids to read until they were begging.
Interesting.
Because by the time he was ready to actually read, he was so far into story. So his vocabulary was through the roof. He has the highest reading comprehension in the house, except my scientist son. I just wouldn't be in a hurry. I would just slow down and just read. So.
And that's totally, society putting pressures on us. If your kids aren't reading by a certain age. And the fear that they'll fall behind. It's hard because even if whether you went to school to be a teacher or not, you know, it's expected. So when they're below expectation, it looks bad on the person that's in charge of their education.
We do have the necessity. You have to be speaking those things over your kids though. So it is true. If you lined up my sons with their peers, they could not read at the same age that some of their peers were. So we had to constantly be saying, our goal is that you fall in love with reading. Mm-hmm. Our goal is to fall deep into story. It's going to happen. The kids that are in school are struggling through reading and decoding words, not you. You are delighting and loving these fantasy type tales. So it's important that we speak those primary goals over our kids. And at the end, it just falls together in a way that it gives them an unfair advantage. It really does. It's cool.
Now, how did you choose the books for this like enriching literature? You know, these are words that I did not grow up ever hearing. I remember my mother reading books like, you know, the probably like murder mystery things, you know, to herself. I don't remember even parents like, I don't think they ever read to me. My mom's downstairs too right now. I don't think they ever read to me. And I don't remember it being like teachers. I remember occasionally a teacher would read and show you the pictures, but it wasn't a big thing of our school day at all. So did you grow up with that in your household? And how did you find the books to give to your children so that they did develop that love of reading and love of story?
The first part probably came with me as a parent. I did grow up in a family that did read, but they only read picture books. And it was very Dr. Seuss land. And I'm the oldest sibling in my family. So I was the designated reader to the younger three. And I have this weird draw to fun words. So if I hear a weird word, it just sticks with me, or a weird phrase. So for me, delighting in funny language is fun. So I did bring that with me, but I was ill prepared for being someone that would inspire a flock of kids to become lifelong readers. Our oldest son, who is now 30, by the time he was in fifth or sixth grade, he was reading over 500 words a minute.
Wow.
He today reads over 1200 words a minute. He, this incredible, voracious appetite for the written word. What we did, and I'll say a little bit about that in a second, but we were very big on picture books. Mm-hmm. We would go to the library, and every child had a library card, and we would check out the maximum number of picture books allowed. So I would go home with a crate of picture books every week.
Oh my God.
And the very first thing that I did that I loved was I never let the kids outgrow picture books.
Are you trying to pick a curriculum but feel a little overwhelmed at the variety of options? Me too. I mean, how do you pick a curriculum when you don't know what each one has to offer? Well, I am here to help. I just launched a premium content curriculum series where I interview homeschooling students and parents about specific curriculum each week so that you can take the guesswork out of your curriculum choices. I'll be asking questions like, what does the day-to-day look like with this curriculum? How long does one lesson take to complete? How many lessons does the curriculum contain, and what was the cost? Did you have to order the books, or could you download and print somewhere like a library? Does this curriculum have a lot of reading, writing, games, or crafts? Did your child enjoy this curriculum? Can you do it with more than one child at a time? And if I were to do this curriculum with my child, would I need to add any other supplemental curriculum to it? These are all of the questions I've had while searching for the perfect curriculum to suit my son's personality and my expectations. There is no one curriculum out there that will work best for every family. So I invite you to join me in my search to find out what every curriculum has to offer so that you can feel confident in your curriculum choice and enjoy your homeschooling journey that much more. Right where you find all of your homeschool how-to podcast episodes, you'll see my curriculum series, and you can subscribe today.
Even today, if you walk with me through a bookstore, I'm going to stop you and I'm going to read The Pout Pout Fish with the pout pout face, spreading his dreary wearies all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
And the kids know to walk much faster than me because I'm going to make them stand there and listen to the story. So picture books, I learned very early on, are super valuable because as an author, as a children's, none of my books are published that from my children's books, but you have a limited word count available to you, which means that the language is very carefully picked and crafted, combined with beautiful images typically. So you have this ability to communicate a beautiful message or a story and bring kids along in quick form. Mm-hmm. And I think parents and homeschoolers are too quick to graduate their kids out of picture books and hand them books to go away for quiet time.
Mm-hmm.
I really think that no matter what you're studying, and my oldest son is the one that taught me this, because no matter what you're studying, there are picture books all about it. So I remember opening a textbook. I was in a season of textbooks, and I opened a page on, I think it was Rome, and Thomas goes, "Wait!" And he goes flying back. I'm like, "Dude, I'm trying to read. It's story time." He goes, "Wait." And he goes running and he pulls the five books off of our bookshelves that have to do with the Roman culture. And he opens up all the pictures. Like, his mind had categorized and cataloged everything in the house. So he knew where every piece of imagery or words were about that topic. So for him, he's the one that taught me, I need to look deeper. If you're studying ancient Egypt or you're studying the Industrial Revolution, go to Amazon, picture books about, you know, the Western movement, and look up the titles and then order them from the local library. And then when your kids love a particular title, that's what you add to your library. So we did picture books. That was the first thing. The second thing was I couldn't keep up with my oldest son. I had this mindset that I would read every single book that my children would read so that I could vet all of the information coming into their mind and help them filter. I couldn't keep up with him. So we would go to the library and he would interview the librarian. This is what I'm interested in. What do you got? And so the librarian would help. And then we also got the resources. Have you heard of Honey for a Child's Heart?
No.
Gladys Hunt. I think it's a resource book that somebody else has pulled together resource books for different ages. So great. So I did that. And then I started to shop Sunlight Curriculum's book lists. Like, so I would go and I would look and I would pull books from their book lists.
All right. I will link all of that in the show's description. Yeah. So for anyone listening that wants to also check that out, besides me, we can, cause yeah, I'll go to like the Read Aloud Revival website.
Sarah's
and grab amazing. Her. And, so that's what I've been doing a lot of this past year, but I do know the pout fish. We do have, I might've actually brought that with us. My daughter downstairs might have it in the bag. but yeah. So it's, as you're talking, I'm currently in the process of writing a children's book and basically on like, how to handle emergencies, because in today's like we grew up with landline phones, right? Most people don't have them. Do your kids know how to call 911 from a locked phone and just different things, online predators, that sort of thing. So, but it's in rhyme. So, it's interesting what you were saying about the, illustrations though, because though I'm just going to self-publish because it's just something I want to do for myself. I don't really have time for trying to solicit, if nobody reads it, that's okay. It's an accomplishment, but in looking for illustrators, I contacted a woman whose illustrations I fell in love with and she gave me the storyboard back and I'm looking at it like, no, we had different visions for this. So I went through and I don't know if I said to her in the email, you might regret working with me. You could totally say that you are not up for this task, but this is what I see on every single page. Because it's a how-to book, it's not like a fun little story, even though I do try to make the words fun.
Right.
But I wanted to tell a story with the pictures. So I have like my crazy little 1.5-year-old. I have like the 1.5-year-old in every page doing something that's causing an emergency. But that's not actually in the story, as the parents are telling the older son, this is how you would call 911. This is what happens when you call 911. An operator comes on the other side. This is the police, the ambulance. But, because I feel like, too, there's a lot. And this is across the board. Parents, they keep us so busy when your kids are in school, especially. You think the school is handling all of it. And the school things we only handle, A, B, and G, you handle the rest at home. But we're going to make, and then society makes you so busy between get to work on time, before care, after care, sports, everybody in the class has to be invited to the birthday party so nobody can feel left out. And so your weekends are busy doing that. You have no time to sit there and say, let's read our fun picture books. Do you know how to call 911? Let's take out my cell phone and try it together on a regular basis. Do you know mom and dad's last name? So I wanted to bridge that disconnect too, but I find it so amazing today how much like I'm home with my son and what I see. And then thinking back to myself when he was first born, I was working and he was in daycare and all the stuff I missed. And how did I even have time to do all of that? Did you work before you started homeschooling?
I worked with my parents I was the manager of their little mom and pop business until our oldest was 4. And that when he went into the private daycare, it was that in that age bracket. I've been home since he was 4 as a full-time mom. But then as a homeschooler, I launched my blog and then life coaching probably like 12 years ago type thing. So I've worked from home doing the laundry, the cooking, the parenting, the teaching. And then, I have done some of this stuff along the way too. It's a lot. It's living in a pot of spaghetti.
Yeah. That's a good way to reference it.
It just is.
Yeah. But it is hard when you're that parent that Well, it's all difficult, right? Like whether you're the parent mm-hmm. that has to get your kid up at 6 a.m. so that you can get out of the yeah. door by 7 a.m. and get them to daycare or before care or whatever, and then yeah. pick them up for 5 or make sure someone's getting them off the bus and getting the homework, getting the sports, getting the dinner, getting the showers, getting them to bed. And then it's also hard being the one home all day, though I do feel now that I've done both. One is obviously more rewarding, but it took a lot for me to, and I'm still breaking out of the quote unquote matrix of it all.
Yeah.
You know,
it's hard because especially in today where, you know, being a stay at home parent is not validated, and it's people that don't understand homeschool really don't understand staying home with your kids and homeschooling. It's like, why on earth would you do that? There's so yeah. many things. But I'm excited for your journey about being a children's author. I'm holding the draft to my current book that's being published next week or the week after. So I'm super excited.
How exciting. Now, what is that yeah. about homeschooling or something totally different? Mm-hmm.
It's called the 13 Teeny Tiny Truth Bombs About Homeschooling.
It's just a small little title.
Just a small little title.
Rolls off your tongue.
Well, truth bombs, like the idea that, you know, the dreams about homeschooling kind of clash with the reality type yeah. things, and to be, you know, the pot of spaghetti type reality. So anyway.
Oh, that's fun. So awesome. Where would people, I'll link that in the show's description too, when, cause this won't come out for a little bit. So it'll probably be released by the time. So I'll put a link
it'll
to that.
It'll be on Amazon. It'll be on Amazon. So yeah.
Perfect.
It'll
be good. And when are you expected? What date are you expected for that to release?
It's going to launch on February 8th. Awesome. Right now is when it's targeted to launch. I'm trying to get it to, it's in the final stages, like right now I have it being filtered through the families that we life coach, like yeah. mentor. They get first dibs. So they're like going through it and vetting it and getting their reviews ready and all that fun stuff. So that there's feedback that goes with it when it goes yeah. live. So
congratulations. Excited. That Thank is you. So cool. And from the perspective of I raised 5 boys and, yeah. and they are, I assume, contributing members to society at this point.
I will tell you that I recently did a YouTube video where I took people on a time machine of what it looks like to homeschool for 25 years.
Oh, how cool.
And when I did that, I was shocked. Well, first of all, my computer did a hard dying death in 2009. So I don't have a lot of pictures of homeschool before then because digital things, you just don't print pictures anymore. But when I looked back at 25 years of homeschool, what I saw was very little paper, very little curriculum, a lot of time together as a family, a lot of adventure. And so how did that turn out? Even though we did this much curriculum and we spent this much time with our kids, where did they end up? Our oldest is a master historian who is also a machinist that it is thriving. He makes the minuscule parts that go on the huge earth moving trucks, the huge ones, like fine tuned, where he needed to learn calculus to do his job. So he's married and he's doing that. Our second son graduated with a degree in digital filmmaking and has written screenplays and has produced like short films and all this stuff. Our third son is a master musician. He's a master guitarist on his way to being a worship pastor. Very skilled. Like his guitar playing is incredible. I'm sitting in the room with our only true academic against my will. He became a mathematician and a scientist. I had no desire to teach the higher things, but he has an associate's of science degree and is going to be a marine biologist. And then our youngest didn't read till he was 10 and is at a private university studying business and is rocking life. And honestly, Cheryl is headed mentally for the Olympics in 2032 to be on a rowing team in the Olympics.
Wow.
So when I look at my kids and I looked back and I thought, there's no way that they should be this successful in what they do. They shouldn't. There were years we didn't do science, and yet we still raised a scientist. There were years that I felt like we hardly got any school done, and yet they're all potty trained. They all know how to empty the dishwasher. They can split wood with axes. They can light fires. They're the first one that'll help you if you trip and fall and you drop everything on the ground. They will come help you pick up all your stuff. They can read. They win awards for speeches and writing. I mean, it's like, how is it possible that with very little curriculum that they became that successful? And it truly was because we focused on those master goals. And then once we could see what they loved, right around the age of 12, 13, we leaned into that. We helped our historian become a historian. We helped our writer become a writer. We gave our musician hours and hours and hours to practice his craft. This guy would just turn the page and do the curriculum because that's what he loved. And then our youngest, I don't know how much school he did until he went to college. It's like, but he did stuff like this. This is his very first painting.
Oh my goodness. A beautiful painting of sailboats. Oh my goodness.
Yes. And when he was four, he was so busy, I had to teach him how to crochet so he wouldn't drive the kids crazy during read-alouds. So he does stuff like this.
No. Oh my goodness, yeah. A stuffed animal monkey.
This is like crazy. So anyway.
Amazing. Okay, yeah. So I have a list of questions. Okay, so you said that your boy, I know I got, I'm counting how many questions.
I know, I'm ready.
Okay, so you said that the boys did have their crazy years around 12 or so. How, like, just do you mean hyperactive or attitude-y or all of the above? And how did you manage that?
So I actually went badly the first time. At that co-op school that the kids, where we stepped into homeschooling, my role at the school was to co-teach in fifth grade. And fifth grade is filled with 12-year-olds. And so I remember talking to my co-teacher saying, what is up with these boys? They're weepy and angry and frustrated. And she's like, oh, that's just 12. And I went, huh. And my oldest was still young at the time. And sure enough, when he hit 12, everything changes. So what I learned was, have you ever watched Captain America?
Yeah.
Okay. There is a scene in Captain America where the wimpy Captain Rogers gets strapped into the machine and is transformed into Captain America. 12-year-old boys are that wimpy Captain Rogers being strapped into the machine. And then their body is flooded with hormones. The goal is to transform them into the future man that they're going to be. But just like in that scene, there's pain, sparks fly. There is a mom in there that's trying to scream to turn the machines off because she doesn't like what's going on with that boy, that young man. And then there's a father figure sitting in the background waiting because he knows the guy's going to come through it on the other side. And so with our oldest, we just thought he was rebellious. We thought he was moody. We thought he was being difficult and backbiting and all these things. We didn't recognize the journey that he was on. So by the time we got to our second son, that's when this Captain America thing came. Like, I know it was the Lord that put that on my heart. And I wrote a blog post about it and everything, because every time I meet anybody that has a 12-year-old boy, I'm like, you need this. You need this right now. Because this is, I now call it the gauntlet. And so by the time we got to the last three, they were well equipped. You're 12. You're about to enter this gauntlet of change. The goal is for you to come through on the other side, a shadow or a glimmer of the future man that you're going to be. But it's going to be hard. We're going to butt heads. I'm not going to like watching you change from young, my little boy, to the future man. And dad's probably going to go quiet, sitting there watching you, because he knows you're going to come out the other side. and you're going to be confused, all this stuff, just having that conversation. So 12 is also funny, the same time in homeschool that, and it could be between like 10 and 14, but it's the same season in homeschool that curriculum destroys learning. It just destroys learning because the kids need to know that there's purpose in what they're learning, and curriculum doesn't see them. It doesn't validate what they love, who they are, how they work. It's just written by some bald guy 1,000 miles away that wants to sell a bunch of books. And the kids know
it. His last name's probably Rockefeller.
I'm telling you, he's making a fortune. But so here you have kids that are confused and changing to becoming adults, and they're wrestling with, but I don't see the purpose in why I'm doing this. And now you have World War IV break out in a homeschool house because you've got attitudes that you have to deal with, and the kids don't want to do the curriculum. It's just this train wreck that happens. So that's my favorite season to help people get through.
Well, and in thinking as you were talking, isn't that the time right now that they are introducing all of these gender fluidity ideals into the school system? And of course, they are going through these, why am I even here? You know, confusion things. And, I feel different. We all go through it. And so what a time to take advantage of a young person that does not know which way they're going, and like luring them into something that might have consequences for the rest of, that will have consequences for the rest of their life.
It will. It's very sad.
Now,
it's very
sad. My son's 5, and I feel like this is what he's going through. But he's always had this kind of, like, he's a good boy, but he, like my mother and I, there's a lot of animosity between us, and I feel like my son has that with me. And I'm like, this is why I wanted a boy, because I didn't want to have the relationship that I have with my mother with you. And I don't know if it's like an aura that just like comes off of me, and he like feels it, and that's how he retaliates, or what. But it's just like that butt head kind of thing, or if I say one way, it's going to be a different way, or he'll say something and look at me just because he knows that what he said will get under my skin, and just doesn't listen to anything. If I'm like, get out of that puddle, we haven't even started the hike yet, wait till the end of the hike to go in the puddle and get wet, you know, he just won't listen. So is that normal? Is it something? What am I doing wrong?
No, you're doing, now I'm old enough to not worry about stereotypes or what people think about me. So I can tell you what most people already know is that boys are different creatures than girls. That's the first thing. I can tell you that there's something in boys. And as a believer, I know it's a God-given attribute, like it's a God-given trait, but there's something in boys that they need to dominate things. They need to be respected. They need to be seen. And our sons will start to be looking for respect and glory, some of them from a very early age. So when you have a 5-year-old that's bucking, it could be the beginning of a power struggle of he can't articulate the fact that he feels that you need to be dominated.
What are your thoughts on the Federal Reserve? Have you thought about how you're going to teach your children about it? Well, I want to let you know about the book that I was reading last night with my son from the Tuttle Twins. It is called The Tuttle Twins and the Creature at Jekyll Island. Now, smarter people than me probably already realized that this was an adult book out there, and the Tuttle Twins took the most valuable information from that and put it into a children's book format for ages 5 to 11, but honestly,
I just turned 40 and I learned a lot from reading it. It is all about the Federal Reserve and how that came to be and how money works. And when you print more money, that it is actually not making more money in the world. It is actually adding less value to the money that we have. The Tuttle Twins and the Creature at Jekyll Island takes you through the story of Emily and Ethan Tuttle, the two twins that really love exploring and learning, and the beautiful way that the story unfolds while we are learning about our governmental system. I invite you to click on the link in the show's description or go to thehomeschoolhowto.com, and under listener discounts, you can find the Tuttle Twins link and use code Cheryl40, that's Cheryl40, for 40% off on anything through the age 5 through 11 series. I have read all of these books with my son. He loves them. He actually asks for them. Like, I'm not even joking. I'm a horrible saleswoman. I'm not even joking. He asks to read these. The pictures are adorable. The story is so cute. He kind of feels like he's getting to know Ethan and Emily now. So like, he wants to see what they're getting into. And each time we read it, he comes up with more really good questions to ask. And I'm like, you're 5 years old. This is so cool that you're thinking up this stuff. These books just provoke those kind of questions. And in the back of the book, there are discussion questions that if your kid isn't already asking them, you can ask those questions. And it kind of provokes that thought process in their little brains. So I urge you to check out the link in the show's description or at thehomeschoolhowto.com under listener discounts and use code Cheryl40. That's Cheryl40 for 40% off on anything on the age 5 through 11 series.
And so in our house, all of my kids are taller than me. Very young, I would have to have them sit down and just to remind them, okay, just sit. Let's just look at this parental, like, I'm the parent, you're not. But there's something about a boy that needs to be respected, needs to be seen. So a five-year-old that, if you can start changing your language instead of telling him what to do, you can start validating that he's a valuable member. You appreciate the hard work that he's doing. Give him heavy things to do, you know, things that he can express his. I mean, I raised a bunch of archers.
Yeah.
I mean, I got axe throwing men in my house. So for us, it was all, and not everybody is a, you know, hard nosed, flannel wearing axe throwing, you know, man, but
not today.
But they need to be seen. Yeah. It was one of my readers that, introduced me. There's a book called The Respect Effect, I think it's called The Respect Effect. And it's basically teaching moms that for our boys, they don't want to hear, I love you. Oh, I love you, sweetie. They don't want to hear that. They want to hear, oh, I see how hard you worked on that. Well done.
Oh, now, is it the same for husbands?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Although they want the I love you too, but there's something that they need, you know, we nurture relationships. And I mean, I will get off this phone and I'll be like, Cheryl, I love you. This was so great. You know? And that's like, you'll receive that as I respect you. I see you.
Yeah.
Right. Like all in that. But our boys are different. They need, I can see that was a very huge challenge, and I am so proud of the way that you handled that difficulty. And wow, you're on your way to being a champion man, right? They just puff up, and it's not an arrogance. It's this, that's right. I'm a master and commander of my own destiny. And it does start, my youngest is the most testosterone filled person I have ever met. So he needed that almost from birth.
Okay.
And then some of my kids are super soft and they're like super squishy, but they still need that respect, if that makes sense. So
it definitely does. And I think like my growing up was more like, know your place kind of thing, don't embarrass me kind of thing. So that tends to just naturally come off of me. I don't want to be the parent with the kid that everyone's like, oh, don't invite them. We don't want them here because of her kid, you know? So I feel like I'm pretty self-aware, but in being mm-hmm. self-aware, you're like trying to control everything about how your family comes across. So in that, I am probably like, kiboshing his inner, you know, man to be like, we don't do that. We don't do it here. Don't embarrass me. So yeah, that's really good advice. I'm going to like have to figure out how to walk that line of like,
it's tricky because it's not natural for us. It's not natural for us. The other thing too, is that, not all the kids are easy. Some kids are destined, like my youngest, maybe a lot like your son. Captain needs to be in charge, wants to tell you what needs to happen. Mm-hmm. If he walks in the room, he has ADHD and is hardwired to basically be a Navy SEAL. Like he walks in, sees everything. I still call him at university. Hey, bud, do you have any idea where the filter is for the thing? He's been gone 6 months because he has everything in the house memorized. He knows where everything is. Kids like that need challenge. And they're super challenging. You feel like, I felt like, why are you arm wrestling me with everything? Don't go toe to toe with me on everything. Yeah. But the encouragement is that they're destined to do great and hard things. They're built for challenge. So the harder they are when they're 4, 5, 6, the more they're likely going to go on and do great things when they're older. And it's our jobs not to steal that away from them. Like, we don't want to demasculinize our boys that are destined to be leaders in the world, the same way that we wouldn't want to defemininize. I don't have girls, but if we had girls that were very feminine and delicate and lovely and beautiful and kind, we would want to nurture that as well. If that's their natural characteristic, right? That we don't want to take it away just because society doesn't think it's right.
Well, so, right. And put them on medication just so they can sit in the classroom and do the
class. I'm sitting on my son's favorite chair. It's a bouncy ball because he couldn't sit still.
Yeah. Oh, wow. I mean, that is very eye-opening. Now, just because we're at 46 minutes already. I was going to ask you, now that you've got kids that are grown and out of the schooling experience, how do they view, looking back, like, did they miss the traditional prom and high school football game? Did they do sports teams? Did they have girlfriends? You know, how do they look back on that? Do they resent not doing it? Are they happy they homeschooled? Will they homeschool their kids?
Good questions. Probably all five of the boys would answer some of those differently.
Sure.
Our oldest was very much our guinea pig. We had no clue what we were doing. And we spent a lot of time figuring out who we were as parents and as homeschoolers at his expense. And I'm happy to say that although we did have a prodigal season where we didn't have contact with him for a few years, now it's swung full circle and everything's fully restored and it's wonderful. He really struggled with the homeschool, being homeschooled by parents that were insecure about what they were doing, to be honest. He thrived academically. He thrives in life, and he loved the freedom of doing things like building Legos, playing in the backyard, writing, working towards a novel that he didn't finish, but that he wrote, that he got to lean into history and just pursue those types of things. So I think you'd get the most critical homeschool perspective from him. Our next four, our last four, and this is not like a feather in our cap, but where we live, our kids can do community college for their last 2 years of high school. So all four of the last ones graduated high school with their associate's degrees, and they loved entering. And you don't need to go to college to be a success. My husband has worked for NASA and does not have a college degree. So we have that example in our home. However, when the boys merged into community college, they skipped over all of the high school drama. So none of the five had girlfriends. when they were growing up. They had friends, but they didn't have girlfriends. None of them went to dances. They did a little bit of, like, one of them played Little League. Our second son had a benign tumor around his eye, so he couldn't do head anything that was going to cause, like, head injuries. So we kind of pulled back from sports when he was born. And then, but he pursued writing and art. He's an incredible artist. The last three, my husband, we moved to Washington, and we live near the Puget Sound. So there's water everywhere. And there was a local rowing team. And so he told all three of the boys, you guys are going to try rowing. And he goes, it's just mandated. You're going to try it. If you hate it, you don't have to do it. But if you love it, we'll keep doing it. One of our sons hated being our musician. He's like, no, I want to play my guitar. And my husband's like, no, you're going to row. You're going to try it. And so they were on the crew together. We call them our musketeers. And through there, our youngest caught the rowing bug and has turned into a future Olympian. Like, he's truly that way. What did they miss? They missed a lot of, even when we would, even when we were attending church that had very vibrant youth groups and stuff, a lot of times the kids would just sit with us in church, because youth group is filled with a whole bunch of youth type stuff. And it's not all, you know, if the leaders aren't awesome. Anyway, there's an aside there. They would typically choose to be with us. So there was a lot of times that, and they graduated, some of them graduated during COVID. So we had the COVID season where it was really isolated, like during a teenage thing. I think when we look back, I think they'll say things like, I didn't have a ton of friends. I didn't do a lot of things, but I don't think I'd trade my life. You know, they got to row, we got to explore, they got to develop their talents and their abilities in ways that just, they stick out like sore thumbs in a world that is just so crazy. It's like, you can just go, ooh, what did you do? Because I want to do that. Like, whatever you did to raise this kind of a person, please tell me more. Like, those are the types of kids that they turned out to be. Were they sad as teenagers? Yeah, because hormones make you crazy. So there's seasons where they were sad, or where they were angry, or they were frustrated. But then there were also seasons where I was angry and I was frustrated and I was lonely, you know.
I was just going to say that, right? But so do public school kids. They feel that too. They're lonely. Yeah. Even though there's kids in their classroom, they don't necessarily talk to them. They'll look at them through their social media account, but that's still lonely, right? They're still, depression is higher now than it ever has been.
It's so bad.
So that leads to my next question. Did you allow screens in your home?
We had even with the strictest screen rules, I just want to say pornography and junk still found all of our kids. So it's not a matter of if they're going to be exposed to things that you don't want them to know. You have to equip them for when it happens, what do they do? With that said, we only had screens in the kitchen, at the kitchen table, during school. None of the kids got phones until they were 18. And we have a no bedroom, no bathroom screen policy in the house. So the phones, if you forgot, you lost your phone, we would take it away. So we still had strict screens, but it's, the junk still finds them. So you have to figure out, how do you equip your kids? And that's unique for every family. So
yeah,
good filters and all that.
You know,
stuff.
I never thought about that before. Like, porn, like, from what it was decades ago to being on, I mean, they lure you. I can only imagine with, and then getting it into the younger kids and, you know, so like they can be thinking they're doing the most innocent of things. And then like one click and all of a sudden, you know, you're looking at something that could get you in trouble legally and just morally wrong. Which makes me,
and they don't know what to do, right? They don't know what to do. They see something and they're like, well, that feels yucky.
Yeah.
So they don't say something.
Right.
But it's more likely too, if they're hanging out with friends, their friends are going to be like, hey, look at this.
Exactly.
Like, and so yes.
Ironically, my father passed a year ago, January. Well, he was on his ninth life, I promise. Love the guy. But he was on his ninth life. But in it, my sister went and like got like this like bracelet that he had. I found all his Playboys. I come home with a big box. My husband's like, what is that? I go, this could be worth money someday. I mean, a man like, they don't make this. And so I'm like, maybe when my son's 18, I'll throw him the box of Playboys. Like, here, you can't get into trouble with any kitty nothing on this stuff. This is all you get.
Oh, my gosh.
But I was like,
it's such a different world.
To throw it away seemed kind of like, well, I mean, like, this is kind of like, this stuff doesn't exist anymore. Like what, like when we're in this futuristic, you know, cause look at where we've gone from 1950s, 1960s.
Yeah.
My dad was getting them from the '60s, and that's 60 years ago. And then imagine 60 years from now, pull one of those babies out. They'll be like, what? What is that? Everything's digital. You put on your virtual reality mask and, that's how you have.
But even with like the junk aside, one of my kids won, so funny, five sons. One of the speeches he won was delivered for the Daughters of the American Revolution. Like, so he gave this speech. And one of the pieces of research that he had come up with was about internet, addiction.
Yeah.
And there are actual places right now where there are children sitting in places where they're hardwired wearing diapers so that they don't have to get up and use the restroom, but they can finish playing their game for 18 hours straight. The internet addiction is so bad.
Wait, where is that?
I think it's in China. There's actual like a gaming dojo type places. The kids will go to play games, but they're so addicted to what they're doing. They're teenagers, but they'll wear diapers so that they don't have to get up. It's so bad.
Word.
So I remember talking, we had moved and my son was texting his friends and he's like, oh, I'm just having this fun conversation. I'm like, you have till Saturday to have an actual phone conversation with your friends. Otherwise I'm taking your phone. And he's like, what? I go, texting is not having a conversation. Yeah. So don't deceive yourself. Mm-hmm. So there's this whole thing with screens is that most likely whatever kids are doing, it could and should be less, right? But every family has to decide what that is. This world is so hardwired, you can't even apply for a job without being online mm-hmm. anymore today. Mm-hmm. So you need the skills mm-hmm. to handle the screens, but you also need real life communication skills.
Yeah.
I could talk to you forever. I can tell.
I know. Hopefully we can do this again sometime.
Oh, I would love it.
Let people know where they can find you if they want to check out your book or your, the rest of your business, your coaching.
Yeah. So we are at homeschoolingolympians.com. And what we do is life schooling for homeschoolers, helping people truly understand the three basic stages of homeschooling, the foundations where kids learn to read, the flourishing and fun stage, which is where dream homeschool lives, and then how to launch your kids successfully into life. So that's at homeschoolingolympians.com. Lots of resources out there. And then a sneak peek at Teeny Tiny Truth Bombs for Homeschooling. That'll be available on Amazon in February. So
perfect. Well, yeah, this will be released past that date. I will let you know exactly when. Perfect. And I'm going to link everything, your book and your website, in the show's description so anyone can check that out. Becky, I hope you'll come on again sometime and we can continue this. It's been so fun.
I would love it.
Awesome.
I would love it.
Thank you so much for meeting with me today. Best of luck to you and the book.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thank Thank you for tuning in to this week's episode of The Homeschool How-To. If you've enjoyed what you heard and you'd like to contribute to the show, please consider leaving a small tip using the link in my show's description. Or, if you'd rather, please use the link in the description to share this podcast with a friend or on your favorite homeschool group Facebook page. Any effort to help us keep the podcast going is greatly appreciated. Thank you for tuning in and for your love of the next generation.